Yeah, there we go. Oh, well, hello. All right, folks, good morning. We are, yes, and good morning. Thank you, Ken. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you. Excellent. Awesome. It's a nice warm day here in Atlanta. Coming from Seattle, living in Texas for a bunch of years, this feels good. People say it's too humid. I'm like, it's not humid enough. All right. So we've got a lot to cover today, so we're going to go ahead and get started now. If folks come in, that's awesome. If you need to step out, take a meeting, that's fine. We're not going to take too offense, although Brandon may take offense. I typically don't. So my name is Matt Barber. I'm a principal program manager on the CRM platform team. I own on the platform team the really the deployment platform, the solutions framework, the marketplace integration, app source integration, the infrastructure that makes all of that work. A large part of the SDK, large part of the tooling systems, and some other projects that are coming that can't really talk about just yet, but are going to be really awesome. And you guys will get to see those real soon. Joining me today is Brandon Kelly.
Hey folks, my name is Brandon Kelly. I'm a senior solution architect. I work inside of Microsoft's CXP division in engineering. CXP is the customer experience program. I run a team that sort of does two things. We do escalation and intervention. So if you end up in some really bad trouble, you might see me. And we also are in the tooling and perf business. So we spend a lot of time sort of working around performance of CRM and sort of helping the rest of our engineering teams understand sort of performance challenges from customers and things like that. So.
Okay, so by show of hands here, who has ever opened or worked with Visual Studio? Okay, awesome. Is there anyone that has not? Okay, one person? That's fine. So the first part of the presentation is going to be pretty much decks. I'm going to do some talking. Typically, I do the Visual Studio stuff, but we're going to change, and Brandon's going to take over all the actual demos and do all of the stuff. We're going to essentially do kind of some setup at the front and then Visual Studio at the end. I'm glad to see you. We've got a fairly good developer-focused crowd in here. Typically, I get bad marks anytime I open up Visual Studio at a conference like this. So I'm glad you guys can actually empathize. So let's get started. So what are we going to cover? Straight off, we're going to go through some overview of the solution system and talk about kind of the evolution of where it's going. We've been working on the solution system every release, whether you've seen it or not. We've actually been doing stuff every release to progress us along a overall game plan. That game plan being around things like ALM, marketplace support, developer support, those sorts of things. We're going to talk about the tools that are out there. Every time I give one of these pitches or conversations and we talk about it, generally there's a tool in there that somebody says, I didn't know that was there. So I tend to now include a little segment that goes through all of that. And then we're going to go through the developer experience walkthrough with Brandon, where we're going to be in Visual Studio. There shouldn't be any decks. No decks for you, right?
No decks.
No decks for him. So everything is code, everything is tools, everything is actually, let's see it all work. Okay, so let's get started. So first off, let's talk about CRM solutions, kind of go through a history of where we came from, where we're going. I always like to start it this way. If you are ever wondering or ever ponder how many versions of CRM are actually in active support, that's the list. So these are what we are actively supporting today. Those, the two on top, CRM 4.0 and CRM 2011, so version 4 and version 5 are in extended support. What extended support means is that we are not actively shipping updates to them. We are only supplying critical security fixes to them. Okay. Everything from 6 on forward is either an active release or an upcoming release. Okay. So in the wings right now, just getting ready to come out here in the fall, is the 8.2 release, which we're calling Centaurus. It is... right now, the brand name that's being associated with it is Dynamics 365. We'll talk a lot about that in the coming weeks. And then the version that's actually in development actively is our version 9.0 release, which we'll talk about probably in the fall or in the fall or winter.
Hey, Matt, I'm just curious. Anybody in this room run a version that wasn't on that list at some point in their career? Anyone here touch 3.0, 1.2?
Is there 3.0, 1.2 in here?
Thank you to you for sticking with us.
Let me ask a couple of questions about that. Is anybody actually on 4.0 in this room? It's not. You can say yes. Okay, that's good. That's good, because I asked two convergences ago, I asked if anybody was on 4.0, and I got half the room to raise their hand. And I was like, anyone on 2011? Okay, a couple of folks. Awesome. 2011 on-premise, I imagine. Anyone on version 6.0 or 2013? Okay. 2015? Okay, so I imagine the rest of you guys are on 2016 or just thinking about it and haven't picked a version yet or haven't gone anywhere. All right, so let's move forward. So what's in the solution system? What's changed? So when we entered the 2013 release cycle, so as you guys are aware, those of you that have been with us for a long time, you know that we introduced this concept called solutions in 2011. But we introduced it in two forms, a thing called a managed and a thing called an unmanaged. And we were kind of indistinct about what they were and when you applied which one. In 2013, when we walked into 2013, we redefined what managed versus unmanaged was. And we stuck to that. Unmanaged is for development. It is for building. Managed is for delivery, when you're actually shipping something, moving it out from production. So the intent behind the two is that an unmanaged solution exists in your development environment, potentially in your test environment, and then what actually goes out into production, into your production environment, is the managed version. Okay, now, when we did that in 2013, I had lots of people stand up and look at me and go, well, that doesn't work because insert your favorite solution problem here. Okay? And that's exactly the way it worked. Insert your favorite solution problem here. We progressed through that with the understanding that, yes, we knew there were problems, and we knew that there were issues, but we had to establish the precedent that we were moving forward with to resolve the confusion, okay, as to what was what. Now, what that meant was, is we had committed to the path where unmanaged was for dev and managed was for release, which means we had to solve all of those managed problems. Okay, so that's what we began to do. In 2013, we also introduced a versioning capability into the solution systems. It used to be the design of the solution system was you could take it up, you could take it down, you could move it laterally within a release, it would just work. A lot of the problems in the managed solution were based out of that premise, in the fact that trying to write code to guess at what you actually meant to do was problematic. We guessed right about 85% of the time. And the remainder, where we guessed wrong, there was no real easy way to fix it except go to unmanaged. So introducing the version concept into solutions allows us now to control how that dependency matrix now works. We're going to look at that. We added some new capabilities in the infrastructure to allow us to deploy solutions more asynchronously. And we also added the ability, as part of the introduced version support, to export solutions to a specific version of CRM, okay? Thus taking care of the, well, I built it on 6.1, and I actually need to deploy it on 6. What does that actually mean, okay? So you don't have to know that. The system knows what that actually means, and it deals with trimming your solution to fit that. We also added the beginnings of a new set of solutioning capabilities around packaging, solutions, plus data, plus install code. This was the concept of adding or creating the solution installer capability that we have for CRM. Who here, by show of hands, is familiar with AppSource? Anybody know what AppSource is? It's CRM Marketplace. Okay, so AppSource is Microsoft's marketplace engine now for both CRM, for AX, for Navision, for Azure, for Power BI, and some other properties that are coming out. The beginnings of the CRM support for that were introduced in version 6.1. Okay, that's how far ahead that we were thinking about this. Okay, now, moving on, in CRM 2015, we added some updates. We refactored some of the CRM UX. We added additional capabilities to the solution export system so that it was more sensitive about what went out. We resolved all known issues with custom activities at that point. Okay, why do I call that specifically out? The large volume of problems with managed solutions had to deal with upgrades, had to deal specifically with patching solutions over versions. And they were almost all rooted out of the activity system, the custom activity system. The intent, the reason was relatively detailed, but the base concept that caused the problem was the inheritance model that the solution system used, or the activity system used, and the solution system tried to understand. In order to fix this, we actually rewrote the activity system, the custom activity system, scratch up, rewrote it. As part of the 7.01 UR1 release for CRM, we actually rewrote it with backward capability in order to solve these problems. To date, we think we have literally got them all. There was one problem that was reported by ADX prior to our acquisition of them in the 7.1 release, which we solved, which was dealt with coming from CRM 5 through an upgrade, through this strange path that they took to get to this org. But we believed that we've solved them all. Now, why do I call this out? We delayed the 7.0.1 release for almost 2 months to rewrite this system. That's how serious we are about the solution system. Okay? When we see an issue like that, we are taking it all the way. It came out of service sustain engineering, came back to core dev. Core dev took it up and redesigned it so that it worked going forward. Okay? That kind of commitment is the commitment that we're now investing in the solution system going forward and what you will see in the future. Okay? This was also the beginning of what we called the PVS system, the Preferred Vendor Solution System. So in 2013, we introduced a thing called Package Deployer. We'll talk about that a little bit later. Package Deployer has three forms. It has a WPF client, PowerShell client, and with this release, the online deployment client. So the ability to deploy solution components, packages, through the admin center of CRM. This is the basis of now what we do today in Microsoft, specifically the CRM team and other satellite teams that build for us, where all of our dev is now done as solutions. All of our application features that you're seeing come out as part of the 8.1 and the 8.2 upcoming release are actually developed as solution components and deployed within our infrastructure that way. All right. So moving forward, 2016. 2016 was a pretty intensive change in the solution system. And what just happened there?
Looks like you lost it.
PowerPoint crash. There we go.
Hey, well, that's coming up again, too. I want to underscore that thing you just said about us using first-party solutions to deliver functionality. That is really significant. Like, when you stop to think about it, what does that mean? It sort of means that we have to consume our own APIs. So no more special hooks for us, right?
Yeah.
That's what that means.
Yeah, that's absolutely what is it. The arguments that we get on internally because, you know, hey, I'm working on the CRM core. Why can't I just insert a special message just to do my job? No. Because the ISVs can't, the partners can't, the customers can't. You do something that's special, and now you've created a place in the platform that we have to maintain independently. So that's a lot of the focus the platform team has enforced here in the fact that we need to make the system as open as possible because we're not the only ones that innovate on it at the end of the day. And that's something that's really important to us. So in 2016, what really happened in 2016 was a pretty tremendous change in the solution system core. And that was that we gave you the ability to now be very, very prescriptive about what was included in a solution. Whether you wanted an entity, and within that entity, an attribute, or the properties of the attribute, or a view, or a particular saved query, all of those became controllable at an elemental level. Why is this important? I'll pick on ADX because we own them now. I can pick on them without fear of repercussion. ADX's primary solution, which was their primary portal component, took on average about 40 minutes to an hour to install on CRM Online. Okay? All we did with them was refactor them using this technique. We stripped out everything they didn't actually touch, and their install time dropped to 15 minutes. No other changes. Okay? That's how important it is that when you build a solution for yourselves or you build it for your customers, you use this capability in CRM 2016 and include only the things that you need. Because the system still has to process all the other stuff because there might be a change. Okay? So, what also occurred in the 2015 release, or 2016 release, is that we evolved the PVS platform into a thing we call PES, or TPS PES. You'll hear us refer to it a couple of different ways. The Trusted Publisher System and the Provisioning Extensibility System are two parts of the same capability. This is also where we introduced the AppSource feature set that allows AppSource today to work. Now, the Provisioning Extensibility System allows us to take advantage of an extensibility feature set that we've had for quite a while in the Package Deployer but we didn't have a way to expose it online. So by show of hands, who here has used CRM Online and configured a portal? Just one person, two, three, four, okay. So when you do that in CRM Online, the way that works today is you go, you buy a portal, you bring it in, you buy a portal, that syncs down to your CRM Online account, you go into your admin center, there's an applications tab. Now when you click on an application, you'll see a list of apps that you own, one of which, in this case, is gonna be a portal. You'll click that, and there'll be a link there that says manage. When you click manage, we are offloading you, we're sending you to a specific administration experience developed by the portal team in isolation. It's not part of the online system itself, where they control and manage your experience. That management experience is doing some last mile data collection, some setup, some feature set, and then in turn instructing the online system, our system, to go deploy a package with some configuration data and concurrently going out to Azure and doing a bunch of setup and configuration. It's deploying a new website, deploying the backups, deploying some caching feature sets, wiring up some authentication feature sets. All of that is set up as part of a set of ARM packages that it deploys. Now, why is this significant? The way we designed this system, it was intended for third-party use. The intent is to allow a developer who is building for redistribution to manage their own experience for the last mile configuration and deal with the setup of accessory assets that integrate with CRM. So that means things like you want to go use AWS to run your service but integrate with CRM, that's fine. You manage that experience and you can deliver it through the app source channel. Okay? We're bringing those feature sets online for third parties relatively soon. First parties already have access to it, and you'll see more of that as part of the fall release, where you'll see those specialized administration experiences.
Hey, Matt, should I just show that real quick in the portal?
Sure, if you want to.
So this is the piece that we're sort of talking about here.
Nope, it would be under the Applications tab.
Gotcha.
Scroll up. Yep, Applications.
There we go.
And he doesn't have any.
I have none, so never mind.
He can't show it. But it shows up right here. But not prepared. All right.
This is what happens when you go off a script. Never go off the script.
All right. So from an evolution point of view, what does it actually look like? So if you look at the boxes there on the right, this is what the progression looks like as we move forward. We are progressively adding. There's a new set of feature sets that are coming as part of the solution system in 9 that are really cool. Let me just say it that way. It's really, really awesome. Not all of which you're going to see in the first release. You will get access to them, but we're using them internally first because we need to kick them and make sure that they work right and can solve those problems early on. This is typically what we do with the solution feature sets we've been doing. There'll be a release where we ship something, and then there'll be a release where we don't. Doesn't look like we're doing anything, but we are. We're just using it internally. And then we bring it out. Okay, so let's drill into some of these controls. One last thing. The support matrix for solutions. Anybody ever wants to actually know what the support matrix looks like? This is what the support matrix looks like. It is a wave. It is a progressive wave. You can translate this in your head to saying, I am able to support at version and higher. Okay? But I can't go backwards unless I use the export as feature set. Okay? And then I can only go backwards to my major. I can't go export as across majors today. The notable exception to that is the V5 release. The V5 release, we dropped solution support of that in version 7, and you cannot import a V5 version of a solution going forward. This had to do with some infrastructural components that we changed in the solution system as part of that. All right, and by the way, this is available in the SDK. So we have this posted on the web, and we update it. All right, so client tools. So kind of hitting the specific client tools that we have had available for a while. We have a set of CRM SDK templates in the Visual Studio space. Now this covers today, plugins, workflows, CRM packaging, WPF extensions, the USD feature set. That's primarily what's in the CRM SDK templates today. To get them, you go out to VS Gallery, search for CRM. You'll find them. Look for the component provided by Microsoft. The plugin registration tool. Plugin registration tool is something that we've been continually revving, and we'll talk a little bit about that. The configuration migration tool was shipped as part of the 6.1 release. The package deployer, the first, and the first iteration of the XRM tooling connector. So the plugin registration tool was heavily redesigned as part of the move into 6.1, and it's been updated continually ever since. Why did we do that? What was wrong with the old one? The old one didn't integrate well with other components within our infrastructure, so things like our internal developer tools, everybody had their own copy of that source code. If anybody's ever done that before, you've got three copies of the same code, 5, 10 in our case, running around. It became very difficult to manage it. So the redesign of the plugin registration tool was built around essentially an infrastructural change that allows us to integrate that tool into lots and lots of different properties. And we brought that out to you guys as part of that. We also integrated F5 debugging into the plugin registration tool to allow you to use the Visual Studio feature set with a run command to actually go load a profile and do F5 level debugging. We improve logging support in the plugin registration tool, so if you have problems where someone says, I can't connect, there's a whole log event file as to what the tool was actually trying to do. And you can provide that to support and to us, and we can turn around and go, you know, why is it that you did a V5 to V6 migration and your CTP to OSDP, which is our billing platforms and login platforms, didn't seem to translate correctly, and allow us to chase those kind of problems down. And of course, we integrated at that point with the developer toolkit internally, which you guys have seen off and on for a while, and we'll do some more with it. The configuration migration tool, who by show of hands has seen this? A couple of folks, okay. So the configuration migration tool is about moving data from one CRM instance to another in such a way that it can be included in a solution package. Okay, it's not intended as a mass data migration tool. That's where you go to your Scribes of the world, your Roxies of the world, those sorts of folks, okay, SSIS adapters. The configuration migration tool is about packaging configuration data that you need to do a deployment of a solution. Okay, that's what he's designed for. It is a fully multi-threaded client. It is embeddable in other applications. From a process point of view, effectively the way it works is you start with a source CRM instance, you generate a schema, you export that. That creates a zip file that includes your data and your schema. That zip file is what you include in your package that then can be consumed later. The import module only needs the zip file. Okay? All right, moving on. The package deployment tool. Package deployment tool is really the heart of what we started and what we've been investing in internally. The package deployment tool allows us to deploy multiple solutions in a succinct order, a known order, with code that can be run during deployment as well as during upgrade. It supports upgrading solutions, which does drop fields. Okay. It also supports the ability to import data files into the environment, both using the traditional CRM method, using file import, or using package deployment feature sets. Interesting note, if you happen to be a multilingual account or you have to deploy to multilingual, the package deployer feature set integrating with the DMT, the configuration migration tool, does support multilingual package deployment. So your solution can go out in French, German, and English, and you can have a supporting data file for French, German, and English, okay, which it will then pick based on the base language of the system, or should you choose to do so, you can override and tell it which one of the supported language, which one of the languages you have to use during data import, okay? To give you kind of an idea of the investment we're putting into it, the template creation, the trial system creation, all of that that you see in CRM Online today actually goes through the online version of this tool. Okay, that's how they're all built. All right. We shipped a new API client, the Windows API client, which is the Microsoft at XRM tooling namespace. I call this out here because of what I'm about to talk about with the web API. The client also supports a thing called the CRM logging control. The CRM logging control contains everything you need to be able to log into CRM through all the current supported technology stacks, including OAuth using your own custom applications. Okay. This is provided as a template in a control, and if you want to add it to your own projects, your own WPF projects, you can do that straight through Visual Studio. You download the CRM SDK templates, and there's a template add-in that says, add a login control to my application. Okay. That adds everything you need. The output of that is the is a thing called a CRM service client. The CRM service client is the executor for being able to talk to CRM. Should you choose to use the CRM service client, talk on this for just a moment. Should you choose to use the CRM service client, please do use the execute organization request feature set. If you don't want to use the helpers, please do not dig through the client to find the actual endpoint and issue commands to the endpoint. Okay? Why do I say that? Because the CRM service client picks the best and most appropriate kind of connection to talk to the CRM instance you're connected to. That may not always be the organization service client. Okay, we have a couple of different APIs that we use today. The CRM service client will pick the right one based on what you're asking it to do. Okay, very, very important. The login control, by the way, if you do choose to use it, it does support full encryption. It passes Microsoft security muster. So we encrypt your passwords, we encrypt your tokens, we get it through our own security team, which if anyone's ever worked with Microsoft security, they're a bear to get through. But we do clear that. So this pretty much passes the test for most government agencies. All right, PowerShell. We have two PowerShell assemblies, two PowerShell libraries that are actively available today. One is, of course, for the on-premise customers, the Microsoft.crm.PowerShell, which is the administration PowerShell for CRM itself. We also have a Microsoft.xrm.tooling PowerShell component that includes feature sets for both connecting to CRM as well as package deployment within the environment. So if you happen to be into PowerShell scripting, you enjoy using PowerShell, you like doing that feature set, we can support you both with a login client. It does bring up an interactive login prompt should you choose to want it. You can use a connection string as you could with the old XRM client feature set. You can use a called out command prompt where you can give it the login name, the server, the URL, the type of authentication, the token that you'd like to use. All of that is supported through the PowerShell client, just as it is through the component client. The PFE team, so I've got one of the guys in here that worked on it. Actually, I got two of the guys in here that worked on it. Also has developed a PowerShell wrapper that wraps around this, a PowerShell module that simplifies a lot of the PowerShell operations. If you're interested in that sort of thing, come up to us at the end. We'll make sure you get the link to it. It's a very, very useful library, very fun to work with, actually. From a PowerShell point support, you see the last two up there, import CRM package and get CRM package. The package deployer also supports PowerShell-based package deployment. Going through that whole concept of being able to build a package and deploy it, we had to have something to automatically be able to test it as we built things. We built the PowerShell module to work on it for testing. You guys got the byproduct and the fact that we released it for you guys as well. All right, so moving on. Server side. So there's a lot that's happened over the last couple of releases on the server side. Who here uses the service bus feature set for CRM? And I imagine I'm gonna get a bunch of, I've got two, wow, cool. Service bus integration with CRM has been, for lack of a better term, a pain in the butt, okay? We were ACS based. It required Azure's moved away from that. It required a ton of setup just to get it to work. It was just really ridiculous. And we also only shipped .NET objects across the line, which meant you couldn't generally consume it without our library on the other end. We rebuilt that as part of the 8.1 release. So as part of the 8.1 release that's available now, that was the June release of CRM, we now support connection string-based connectivity out to service bus using SAS keys. We support shipping objects as JSON, as XML, or .NET objects. We also support event hubs as part of that work. We use this extensively internally. We have several solutions that are built on our own product that we use to do our own management. And we use this to actually communicate with other systems at Microsoft. So this isn't something we built and we're tossing out there. We actually use it extensively. We see our conversation just a minute ago about Microsoft product group itself using our own infrastructure and therefore forcing the evolution of these things, okay? So this is now fully in the product. It is fully solution aware. You guys can take advantage of that. You can ship components that are part of that. Authentication. As part of the 7.1 release, we shipped, actually it was part of the 7.0 release, but really it came into its own as part of the 7.1 release. We shipped OAuth as an authentication vehicle. Okay? OAuth essentially enables you to use the OAuth user flows and MFA, multi-factor authentication, for authenticating to CRM. We've shown this a couple of times in regards to the the MFA capabilities of WS Trust. And it was kind of kludgy and clunky. It worked for the web flow, but it didn't work for the API flows. There was a bunch of stuff. So we kind of went away from that. We went down the OAuth flow, which works for both. So multi-factor authentication now works for both server and API clients, cleanly and smoothly. The flow in 7.1 supported password ingestion, password authentication flows, which means that you needed a user in the middle of this. As part of the fall release, we're releasing server-to-server authentication as part of this feature set. So you will now be able to create a service principal as a user object in CRM and manage that and use either certificate-based authentication or client secret to be able to connect that from services. For your customers and for yourselves, this will manifest as a system user in CRM, and the roles and privileges that it is granted are the roles and privileges that it will have. Okay, what does that mean? It means that it is a user. For all intents and purposes in CRM, it is treated as a user of the system. It means audit flows work, audit histories work, audit permissions, field permissions, all the permissioning system and logic system work just as though it were a user. However, it is a very special kind of user in the fact that it is actually a service. Okay? This is coming to you guys as part of the fall 2016 release. If you're in the preview programs, you'll be able to get a look at this relatively quickly. Web API. The web API was initially added in preview in 7.1. We did this as a very much a preview form just to understand kind of what the community response was to this. Why did we do it this way? Our web API is based on OData 4. Who here is familiar with OData as a general principle? Okay. Prior to OData 4, OData didn't implement the concept of dynamic metadata. Okay. It didn't understand, the concept behind OData was always that, okay, well, I have some pre-agreed contract that I'm working about. The challenge with CRM is that CRM is a dynamic data model system, meaning I can, and Brandon will, add something to CRM and suddenly it's available inside the API. Suddenly it's there. OData couldn't tolerate that, which was why we didn't bring forward the original REST endpoint, because we couldn't solve that problem. It wasn't in the specification. So ourselves, along with our friends in AX and some of the other properties at Microsoft, work with the standards body to get OData 4 established in such a way that we could be dynamic about it. We introduced the first preview of that as part of the 7.1 release. We retrofitted it heavily and released it as a commercial, as commercial ready, as part of the 8.1 release of CRM, and as part of the 8.0 release of CRM. And as part of the 8.1 release of CRM, we have now made the official deprecation declaration for the SOAP endpoint, okay? Which means that at a release in the future, beyond version 9, we will remove the SOAP endpoint. We've now asked the community, you guys, to begin the process of moving off the old API and moving forward. Internally, we're doing the same. We're moving off that and all of our infrastructure off that. As part of the fall release, we'll be shipping a global discovery API. This is pretty interesting. In the fact that historically each one of our regions is its own thing. In order for you to find where a customer is, you had to query all 10 of them now to figure out which region it was in. Well, we know that there's several more on the horizon. This is getting a little ridiculous. So we're creating a global discovery system that allows you to query to one place and access all of our commercial content. Okay. Now, it's important to note that our global discovery system does not deal in the private clouds, the restricted clouds, so government, and our German cloud won't participate in that because they're restricted. However, all the commercial clouds will participate. Okay, as we get closer to release, we'll release the guidelines for it. The interface API is a web-based API, but the object it returns is the same one you know today from the SOAP API. So you don't. It's not a big difference. It's not a big leap to get there. We're adding query support for logical names as part of the OData API. or the web-based API. And this is something that's important to understand. We know today that we don't have full parity between the SOAP API and the web API. We're close. We're actually very close, but we don't have full parity. So we declare the deprecation with the statement that it's going to be 1+ release, sometime after the 9.0 release. So most likely version 10 is when we'd actually remove it. And in that time, we will bring them to full parity. Okay? So we'll go ahead and move on. So which API should you be using? If you are building new and you're building for web apps or you're building for mobile apps or you're experimenting and you don't mind dealing with the OData API and the wrappers that you have to build using the T4T templates, use the web API. That's the ask. If you're building for a Windows client, if you're building for the Windows client, you can use the XRM tooling connector, the SDK connector. It currently uses the organization service for a lot of its stuff. However, it will convert internally to use the web API, and it should do so in such a way that if you've written a piece of code on top of it and you're not using the direct connection endpoints, you're using the execute commands that we provide, it will transition seamlessly for you. Okay? It will just work. So with that, I think I'm going to wrap my piece up, and we're actually going to get into the developer tools piece and actually get a look at how to do a lot of this.
Hey, that's pretty cool stuff. Thanks. So just show of hands here. A lot of you guys said you were pretty comfortable with Visual Studio. Who here, you're using CRM, you sort of start in Visual Studio, like you would like to start with code. Just, that's your experience, a handful of you. So who here wants to start doing some stuff in CRM, you start with the browser, sort of start in CRM. All right. Also a few of you. Okay. Well, I'll do it sort of both ways so you can sort of understand what that looks like. I'll start first in the browser. And so what I have here is just a simple sandbox org and sort of a blank solution. And I'll start sort of creating some things. I think one of our PFEs recognizes this org. I've got two entities in here, one that I've created called registration, and I've got the built-in case entity. And I'll go into registration. I'm going to sort of make some things happen here. Let's go ahead and just add some stuff to a form. And this is sort of a classic development experience most people are pretty used to. I'll come over here. Let's just say I want to add a new field. This is an activity entity. And I'll just call this Ignite, for lack of a better words. It's the Ignite field. Let's just say that has some purpose in our system. Obviously, when you guys create data, it'll be more meaningful to what you're doing, to your business. Type came over. One more time. There we go. Save this. So I've added a field to the actual entity. I've added a different field to this form. That's good enough for now. Go ahead and publish our changes. And this is a workflow that many people go through. So the challenge here, of course, is that if I do this, and then I work on a team and 10 people do the same thing, like we potentially might be making conflicting sets of changes. So it's sort of, where does my system of record list, like where does this data actually going to reside? And for most people, the answer is some version control system. And so I'll show sort of what that looks like on the other end, the dev end of that. So if I switch gears and go to Visual Studio, I've got some bits here installed, which are going to represent sort of the dev toolkit. And when you do that, you install that and come over here and tell it I want a new project. Yeah. Much harder with the trackpad there. There we go. And when I do that, I'll see sort of a list of pre-built project types. And so just sort of a quick rundown of what these are. One of these projects holds sort of our customizations inside of CRM. So has anyone here used the solution packager as a standalone tool? Okay. So what it basically does is it takes your solution file, your zip file, and it's sort of going to extract that into a series of individual XML files representing sort of each component. And it does the same thing in reverse. It'll go back and take those files and assemble you a solution out of that. And what we've got here now in the dev toolkit is the ability to be able to do that automatically through Visual Studio without having to shell out, go to the command line or any of those things, house that inside of a project, and have that project participate inside of a source control loop. We have our plugin library. Anyone here write a plugin before? So that's also an artifact that you're going to manage through Visual Studio and build. We have the idea of a package, and a package is essentially like a container project that's going to hold the rest of these things together. And then we have the idea of sort of workflow assembly libraries, and it's very similar to plugin. It's sort of a code artifact you're going to deploy directly into CRM. And so together, between these customizations, your coded artifacts, the relevant web resources, it sort of represents all of the artifacts that you would want to keep in Visual Studio or want to version control for CRM. So I'll go ahead and sort of create one here, just name it the default. And it's going to say, hey, I've already been connected to CRM. Do I want to go ahead and reconnect to the same thing? In this case, I'm going to say yes. If I didn't and said no, it's going to give us that login control and sort of ask for some credentials and some things like that. So it's smart enough to remember. And it's asking me, hey, where am I starting? Like, what's my workflow here? Is it that I start and did the customizations in CRM? Or is it that I'm going to start and sort of do my work in Visual Studio? And depending on who you're talking to, you might have scenarios for both. I'm going to start from CRM because that's sort of where the workflow began. And it says, okay, well, here's what I'm logged in as. That's great. And it's going to say, all right, I'm going to have to take your changes that you make, and I'm going to take them and extract them from a solution. In addition, when you deploy, I'm going to deploy them back to a solution. So it's sort of asking me, what am I doing? And I'm going to use this one here called Ignite. So now I've got sort of the linkage between Visual Studio and CRM going. So now it's sort of, what do I want to do, right? And I can sort of say, I add a bunch of existing things, or I can just sort of say, add some new templates. So in this case, I'm going to add some new ones. And it's going to create me some blank projects for me. And it says, all right, what do you want here? And we'll do some plugins. We're going to take our customizations. And we're going to take our custom workflow activities, too. And it's going to ask me to name these. I'm not very original, so this is the names they got. And the net result of this when I'm done is that I should have sort of a container that has all of the artifacts I need directly in Visual Studio, as well as the ability to sort of deploy and complete a full development loop of changes, whether I make those changes in CRM or whether I make those changes as coded customizations in Visual Studio, I should be able to sync and merge them at every opportunity. I'll take a quick look. All right, and here's sort of the anatomy of what I've got here. So I've got this package, and the package sort of holds all of the major components. Like I said, it's going to link all the different things together that I've got inside my solution. So if I look at its references, I see, hey, the customizations are things like our entity customizations and solution artifacts and things like that are part of my package. Our plugins are part of the package, and our workflow activities are part of the package. Show of hands, like who has sort of a scenario like this with their CRM? Like they've got all of these components they need to bundle, put into one thing. Okay. Sweet. So this is sort of, again, the management tooling that's going to help you live and breathe in Visual Studio and sort of do that synchronization. If I look at what's inside of customizations, you'll see right now not much, right? It's sort of blank, but we'll get to how I'm going to get some of my stuff into this. So we'll sort of revisit that in half a second. If I look at plugins, it's essentially a shell project, and it sort of has in the basics of a plugin for me in this plugin base. And similarly, the workflow activities does the same. So for anyone who's ever written a plugin or a workflow activity, you'll know that one of the first things you need to do is sign those things. Like those need to be strong named. So I will do that. And we'll sign this. Use a new file. We don't need passwords for this, right? You guys will use passwords. Right. I'll do something very similar with our workflow project. Glorious. Anyone ever add up the seconds they've spent waiting for Visual Studio to do things for them? Come up with a number?
No, you should
14,323,874. Sounds about right. All right, great. So that part's done. I won't bother with our workflow for now. We'll just sort of keep going. But you basically do the same thing, right? We'd sign each one. So for the customizations, right? So now I've sort of got this, I've got my shell of a plugin, that sort of thing. What about those schema changes I made, right? Like, how do I get those into Visual Studio? And today, like what most people would do is you'd go into CRM, export the solution, right? As an unmanaged thing, shell it to the command line, run solution packager on that, take the output, copy that, paste it into a project that you've got inside of Visual Studio, check it into source control and pray that all of that worked correctly. And you got it right the first time.
You forgot build the script to repack it.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, you want to solve the other problem? The one where you have to take it out and on the other end? It's a whole new set of steps. So hey, it would be really nice if I just had a one-click action to do those things, right? And so that's what we've introduced in the toolkit here. And I can do it two ways. I can take it from that file. So if I've got the zip file I've already exported, that's fine. We can start our workflow there. Or I can say, you know what, you're already connected to CRM. Like, figure this out for me, right? Which is sort of what we want to do here. So I'm going to go ahead and do that. I'm going to tell it to go grab my customizations. Oop, I'm just going to say, hey, I don't know where to put these. You can give me a target for this. You're going to want to build this. That's fine. We will do that in a minute. But first, give me my stuff. And what I'm getting here is sort of an itemized list. Like, hey, this is the stuff you've done that we've got, customizations we've got for you. Would you like to bring all these over? And here are the actions we're going to do. And I can sort of very granularly select which ones I want to merge into my project in Visual Studio and which ones I don't. For this, I'll just take everything. That sounds good. And yep, it has been modified. And so now, when I reload this project, I quickly see that my entities that I've actually put inside my solution are here. I see the different form XML that represents my forms. And each one is sort of tracked as an individual item. So when I get to merge stage, right, when I go ahead and check this into TFS, like what happens if a developer has made a conflicting change? I should see that, right? My favorite merge utility is going to show me their version, my version, and I'm going to get just that slice of XML that represents my conflicting change. I don't have to sift through, you know, 90,000 lines of XML inside of a customizations.xml file so that I can figure this out. Anyone ever do that? Yeah, you only want to do that once, right? Like once your time.
Let me also call something out on the package structure here. If you expand that folder, this is resources down there towards the bottom. Resources.
Sorry.
Oh, scroll down a little bit. So there we go. Go ahead and expand ENUS. Notice it says ENUS and click on that. Who's needed to change the label on a form before? Okay. So fully localized out with descriptors and names. You can also create new localizations. So creating, say, French is copy this to fr-fr in the appropriate folder from the template. And hand it to your localizer. Recompile it, and you now have French in your solution. You don't actually need to go install the language module on CRM to do it. You also don't need to export the Excel file and try to figure that out. We do export it as a resource file. Again, byproduct of our own internal process, we don't actually use the Excel version, we actually use ResX files internally. So this is something that we make available to you as well.
anyone else here doing globalization in their app? They need to be able to deliver in multiple languages. Yeah, a lot of our customers in different places have multi-geo deployments, some in Europe, some in Asia, and that's a very common scenario. Yeah, we won't tell your dev managers that we did that productivity enhancement for you, though.
No.
Keep your estimates just where they are, right?
Yeah.
All right. I guess we just did on video, didn't we? Oops.
We're not on video, just on recording.
Perfect. All right, so that's great. So that sort of handles a lot of the things inside of our customizations in CRM, right? All the different sort of components that make up the metadata of the solution, if you will, right? The form data, the configuration of relationships, standardy stuff, all that good stuff. Hey, what about my coded customizations, right? Like, how are these a part of that story? you're going to notice a couple different things when we sort of go through this, but there's an integration hook that goes sort of two ways. And again, I can start with CRM, or I can start with code that I've already got. And so whichever one of those stories I need to enable, I have the ability to do. So if I already had a bunch of code, one way would be just merge it into this project. I wouldn't even have to do that, though. I could actually take any regular class library that's already got plugins in it and just reference it from this package, and now it would become part of the thing that gets deployed when we build and deploy the whole package. If I want to actually say, hey, what do I do with the stuff I've got? I need to start writing a new plugin. We'll take a little look at the CRM Explorer pane. And so what this really represents is sort of a live view of the environment that I'm working with, right? So if I actually look at all the entities, here's all the different things that are deployed to that particular organization we connected to, right? I kind of go back, and I want to look at option sets. It's sort of very similar. And so this sort of represents the hierarchy, the tree view that you would see in the web-based solution view, looking at sort of the default solution or sort of the all customizations view. Well, if I take an entity, any of these, right, let's just say who here has written a plugin before? Quite a few of you. So for those who didn't raise their hand in that, a plugin essentially is a story in code that answers this question. When this thing happens in CRM, run my code. Do this. Do this thing that I want you to do. And that's sort of the recipe we're trying to make here. And so what I can do is I should be able to sort of say any of these things. I'll take, let's see, campaign. We'll borrow from that. I should be able to right-click on this, and I can say, hey, make me a plugin for that. And it says, great. I'm going to make you a plugin that does something when something is done on a campaign. The first thing that it's asking me is, what's the thing that you want it to do, that you want to intercept the message for? And so in this case, I'm going to say create. Whenever a campaign is created, it's now going to run this arbitrary piece of code that I've given it. And I've got some other options in here that are a little interesting. And again, there's sort of things you should be able to figure out about all of this that live on MSDN. But I'll sort of give you the basic pieces of this. What you need to know is sort of when do I want to do it? That's an important piece. And so the when is sort of before I start the transaction at the database server, like after I did that, or after the data is actually committed. And you want to be really mindful of sort of each one of those steps, because what your plugin is doing might very well impact the performance of the rest of CRM, right? And so it's sort of a very important piece of the equation. In this case, I'm going to say, hey, after the transaction starts, go ahead and do this. I'm going to run this on the server, and let's go ahead and register that.
So while it's building out, one of the recent enhancements that we've done to the plugin registration tool at the behest of our PFE organization is we tried to guide you away from doing things that we know are performance impacting. So for example, if you create an update plugin or a plugin that operates on anything other than create and try to attach it to all events, we were like, we throw a message, you sure about this? This is a problem. If you create an update plugin, we give you the ability to filter what it triggers on based on what's coming in. So for example, if you only want this plugin to actually trigger because you care that the account name changed, but you don't tell it that, you just say go trigger on update, it's going to trigger whether or not the account name changed or not. We give you the ability in the plugin today to say, or in the registration today, to say only trigger if this piece changes, okay? So as a guide in the tool going forward, in fact, it's in the 8.1 version of the tool, when you try to create an update plugin and you don't give it a granular definition, you don't say, trigger only this, it throws a message at you and says, hey, you're going to trigger for all events on this. Are you sure you want to do that? Okay. Again, we're trying to guide you to more of a performant pattern and guide you away from doing things that essentially are going to eventually generate performance problems for you. Or maybe that's what you meant to do. So.
Right. That's right. The lack of filtering attribute on update, as well as sort of the lack of message name, is sort of the equivalent of a select star for plugins, right? Like, always do this all the time. That's every transaction that goes through your system will run this piece of code. So as you can imagine, there's a cost to that. So hey, you know, we're not going to write a plugin here, but I'll just sort of code something really simple in here that sort of looks for a couple things. We'll just say, hey, get me the entity I'm working with. And we'll say local context dot plugin execution. We got the input parameters target is what I want to get. That's the thing. And actually, let's go ahead and cast that as an entity. We'll say all right, so we weren't very good about that. Fix my syntax error here. Whoop. Perfect. All right. So I'm going to grab an entity here, and then once I have that entity, I can start doing things with it. I can say, so that's awesome, but oh wait, like I have a magic strings problem here, right? Like what if my field doesn't exist? Like this line of code I just written is gonna throw an error. And so we call this sort of late bound, the type that we're using here. It's just sort of a bag of different things, different attributes. What if I wanted a class for that? Like there is a capability inside of CRM to get that. And so that's sort of another story that's enabled by this dev toolkit. So hey, I'm interested in sort of having a class for this type, right? And not necessarily just a generic entity. And when I do that, I can actually come over here and say, hey, let's create me some classes for this. One thing that's new in here is it used to be an all or nothing proposition. So I would have to say, hey, if I want to create types for every entity, like it's all or zero, right? And those were my options. And now we can sort of do that in a more granular way. And so I'm going to say, what are we working with campaign here? So let's take campaign, add that, and it says, hey, where do you want this to go? I want this to go into my plugins project so we can use it. We'll do one per item. It's going to go back to CRM, fetch the definition for what a campaign is, and it's going to actually do some code generation for me on the other end of that. It's like a shortcut.
Yeah, it's actually using the CRM service utility in the background. And in the case of what Brandon did here is, if you only wanted the one, you can actually right-click on the entity in the entity definition, and there's a create class for the one.
And so what I see is I now have a file here called campaign. And if I take a look, I have not just the campaign, but I have sort of all of the different things that were required to support campaign. So I have like the enumerated state values for what state could be, right? And you'll see I've got not just campaign, and it doesn't just inherit from entity, but I have things like iNotify property change. So if I want to take this and bind this to like a WPF application, yep, this DTO is rich enough to be able to do that. So anyone here use automatic property setters versus IMPC and sort of have that issue around what do I do? All right, just me. Sweet. Yeah.
So there's right. Also there's a checkbox on that form on the service util generation form that says create from mobile, which strips most of the declarators off of it. It gives you a much more bare class that is more compatible with other technology stacks. Do you have a question, sir?
Yeah. As time moves forward, now I've changed that entity.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps someone else has even changed it.
Mm-hmm.
Simple refresh, or do I have to go back and rebuild that class?
You have to rebuild the class. So you right-click and regenerate it, and it'll step on what's there and replace it. But that is the there is a debate about the pro, or there's a pros and cons about using late bound versus early bound. And this is, that's the heart of it. If you're doing something that is dynamic, that is ever changing, then you don't want to use strong type classes.
And there's some exceptions. Like there's some places where the update may or may not be something you need to do right away. And so let me give an example. Like if you add a field to an entity, like you only need to regenerate that if you're using that field, right? If you have a need for that.
Absolutely.
But in general, the rule should be like, yes, you make metadata changes to your system, you should regenerate early bound types. And to Matt's point, it's sort of a design decision you'll want to make as to whether or not this is something you could really stomach. If not, late bound's the way to go. I personally am on a mission to remove magic strings from code. I don't like them. It's one keystroke away from a runtime error that you didn't find in testing, and that's frustrating. And so I had this conversation with some devs like a month or two ago about that, like what one letter might mean in your code and how that couldn't just cost millions of dollars, it might cost someone their life. Like, that could be a thing, so.
Case in point, in the product, we tend to use the magic strings because it is a dynamic, dynamically generated thing most of the time. But just a funny story in the USD effort, we actually accidentally, I guess that's kind of an oxymoron there, but the developer put the strings into a ResX file, which went to a localizer who localized them into 48 languages.
Nice.
Oops. Works great in English.
Works on my machine.
Works on my machine. That was a oops moment.
So let's show sort of two more things, then we'll close the loop on sort of the experience. So we did some plugins. We saw the ability to sort of link into CRM service util. If I kind of go back to my plugin code for just a quick moment, we'll see some things as a result here. So like I said, my field equals this. But if I then said, I'll quickly see there is no my field, right? If I did the same equivalent, all of a sudden now I get a compile time error that says, hey, we can't build this thing. I don't know what my field is. That doesn't exist here. So that's, in case anyone's wondering what magic strings is, that's sort of what we mean by magic strings, is not being able to determine at compile time what a problem is like this. Oop. So I'll come back over here. Let's build this guy. So I've got some customizations that I'm storing in here. I can version control all those different things, my schema definitions for entity. I've got some plugin code. Let's do sort of one more thing in my recipe here. Like I got some JavaScript I got to code. We're all in trouble if I start writing a bunch of JavaScript, but for now we'll do that. So I get this file, and the cool thing about being able to use Visual Studio to do this, anyone ever like edit a web resource in CRM through the web UI? I'm so sorry. Like, what's the problem with that? Like, a text box isn't enough? Right, so it's a lot of copy and paste, right? Like, use an editor that's not a text box, and then come back and put it back in. And so that sort of is a hard workflow. Well, now we can do that. We get all the gravy of Visual Studio, something I call it a warm blanket. So I can sort of say, you know, whatever, and I can start typing. And so I get all sort of the syntax pieces and things like that. If you've got add-ins, if you've got the actual VS doc file for XRM, and we publish all of that too, I can reference that from here and get IntelliSense and all that good stuff. And I love IntelliSense. It's like the tool we made that makes everybody get to be really lazy, which is fun. So having all this, I'm going to take this, I'm going to deploy my web resource, I'm going to deploy all my updates, I'm going to do that sort of in one fell swoop.
Got to save your JS file.
Yep. So I'm going to come over here. Yes?
Can you synchronize the both ways from the CRM back into your project?
Absolutely.
And that will tell you any changes on the entities?
Yes. Yes.
Not your classes.
Right, because your code, your plugin code is not being deployed to the CRM server, right? But your web resources, your schema files, like all that stuff about sort of what's different inside of there, yes, would be different, right? Right. So yeah, your source code to your plugin isn't part of what you're pushing to Visual Studio.
But ideally what you're doing here is your actual deployment that's going to whatever your test environment is, there isn't a human sitting in a console clicking the go button. That's your VSRM project pulling the source code, running the compile, and doing the deploy. Okay. At least that's the way we expect you to do it. So.
So do you have the ability within here to tie that web resource to particular actions on particular fields?
A web resource is just a script file. It's just
right. So the linking of it to the form?
You still have to go through the web app to do that.
Yeah.
The experience is still split or will remain split between the web and the coding environment. It's something that we're trying to decide the right venue to do a particular operation or a particular thing. We have a lot of new web tools that we've added inside the environment, and we continue to innovate on those, and we actually are looking at bringing them into Visual Studio as part of it versus trying to replicate them inside Visual Studio. The intent, of course, is that in the future, we'd really like to be able to support VS Code for this sort of thing and other feature sets, which are more web-based experiences. So there's a lot going on in that space.
Got to sign them both.
Yeah, you have to sign both and then drop the... You didn't want a password, did you?
Nope.
No.
We're good. I'd just forget it anyway.
That's why we do MFA.
Right. All right. Good now?
I think you need to go to references.
Yep.
And expand that and drop the Ignite 2016.
Oh, yeah. Gotcha.
Yep. Now go.
All right. One more build, one more deploy.
Should just be able to deploy. It should build for you.
Awesome.
Someone deployed already changes. You now have a config. In the meantime, someone changes it and deploy it.
Mm-hmm.
So in this scenario here, right, it depends on sort of where and what that conflict is, right? But I'll ultimately sort of get the merge between the two. Now, if it's a web resource, right, like I've got a script file, like I'm about to replace that with what I've gotten here. And the story we really want to tell here is the one where Visual Studio should sort of be the hub, right? So if you've got sort of a lot of stuff out of band, you want to use TFS or Git or whatever your repository of choice is, you want to let it do its job, right? And its job is to be that version-controlled history of sort of what's going on here. So if it's not participating in that loop, like that's where you're sort of going to get into a problem with the team, right? And so this is all predicated on the idea that you're going to have a source control system, and that source control system is going to basically serve the function of being the repository of where the work goes.
Yeah. At the end of the day, the intent here is that each dev is operating on their own instance, and then when you go to check in, it does the central check and it does the diff compare at that point. That's generally when you're going to catch the conflict. Now. Typically, that kind of conflict happens at the entity layer, where you've got two devs trying to work on the same entity. Metadata, most of the time, that's very easy to resolve. When you run into form changes, where you've got two devs working on the form inside CRM, that's a bigger problem. That's generally something you don't want to let the code system resolve. Okay, you want to let someone pick who's going to merge those changes and bring them in. I'll use the word open area that we're looking at solving in the future to allow more clean merge of form type data in the system. Entity metadata, we can handle that pretty easily. Okay.
So just to sort of fill the loop here, we've finished our deploy.
Yep, there it is.
And now when I go into CRM, I can see that, in fact, I have the step, what we call the SDK message processing step, that says, hey, this is the thing I defined that our plugin will run when I create a campaign. I have the plugin itself. I've got my JScript file, right? And then I've got my entity with my fields in it that we had put in source control. So some of those initiated from CRM, some of those I initiated as code artifacts inside of Visual Studio, and I essentially use this tool set to bring it all together and do the deployment piece. All right, we want to switch to Q&A?
So let's do Q&A. We're using, so just kind of a premise of where this tool set's being used right now, almost, I'd say almost everything we're building right now internally uses this tool set or a version of it. And why do we say a version of it? There's three or four different versions of it that are in various stages of development where each team has customized it for their purposes, and then we're picking the best of those and bringing them into the core that we're in turn going to release. This tool set, I've said it a couple of times, we are literally on the precipice of releasing it. We were trying to release it just before this drop. We've got a reference issue that's causing a problem. As soon as we solve that, you guys will see this pop out on Visual Studio Gallery, is where it's coming out at. Okay, we've decided to put it on Visual Studio Gallery. It's not gonna be on Connect anymore. You guys can get it there. So, soon. Like, hopefully by the end of the week. Okay?
Let's do
Q&A. Q&A, and I wanted to show this real quick. Let me show you guys, I did mention how the portals piece worked. Let me toss this over here. That's a little small, but just bear with me on that. So here I've got an instance. If I come over here to applications, these are what the applications look like. I'm gonna choose portal. See a managed link, click on that. You notice that we're doing a page redirect and we're actually going someplace else. Okay, so this is a management experience that's built around provisioning just the portal. Okay, I've already done it once, so you didn't see a consent flow, but there's usually a user consent flow that pops up that says, hey, can I access this application? This application wants to access my instance of CRM. It's the standard consent flow that you guys are used to seeing. And that is what you do. In the case of the portal, let's just say I'm gonna go choose one of my instances here. I'm gonna choose that one. And it's gonna go off to CRM, and the portal application itself is gonna go off to CRM, query CRM, ask it for a bunch of data, and then populate its last mile configuration experience based on the settings that are currently in that deployment. What language, who's the portal admin, which portal do I wanna work with, all of that self-contained to the portal. That allows us and you to rev this stuff independent of CRM, playing based on the way that the API toolset works. We make certain guarantees about the way the API works. We hold to those guarantees, much to the groaning and complaining of our internal dev teams occasionally. But we do hold to that because we support things like this, where now I can rev this, make new changes, add new releases to Portal without actually waiting on a major or minor release of CRM to do that. And you guys, once we give you an API, there's a commitment behind how long that API lives. You guys can depend on that API being there. So, all right, so just general Q&A. We've got a couple of minutes left. And questions. All the way there in the back, sir. Is it possible to select two or more web resources and deploy them? Yes. So when Brandon showed the deploy, it popped up, select what to deploy. There is an expansion tree list where you can choose the assets that you want to deploy.
Let's sort of show that real quick, what it was. Back to my solution thing.
Yep, and deploy.
We're here to deploy. And it says, what do I want to deploy? If I expand this, I would get a list. If I had multiple web resources, you'd see them there.
Yep. Other questions? Yes, sir. Great question. So the statement is we are advocating the use of source control to edit the or to manage the conflicts of the components. However, does that mean that we're actually supporting entity edit in XML? Okay, that is a loaded question, sir. The short answer is no, we're not. But merging, we're tolerating. We're running. That's something that's running through a lot of testing right now. We believe we've closed most of the holes in the solution schema that allow you to get yourself into trouble in that regard, but we're trying to find some more. So in short, yes, we allow it for merge right now because both sides had to come from CRM, but if you try to add through the XML schema, that's not something we're supporting.
Just sort of add to that to you. You know, we don't have a way of really understanding the origin of the file that you're about to give us, right?
Yep.
And sort of what you might have done to it before we get there. So we build sort of the resiliency that we think we can do, into that. And there will be a scenario that inevitably someone in this room would dig up that we didn't think of. And so the question really is about support versus should you or could you, or what would the ramifications be? So sort of segmenting those two things, like the support question is one thing because we'll go sort of some distance for you, and then it's you're on your own on this. Like you've been hand editing these files. But then the whether or not that's really a good idea in the long run anyway is sort of a different question. Yep. And we sort of aim to bring a level of maturity to the tooling that takes those situations and sort of puts them as to things that you wouldn't want to do, right? That like there wouldn't be a real advantage to you doing so. So that's the second question that's probably more interesting. So if you've got feedback on that, let's bring that stuff to our ideas portal and some things like that so we can look at that.
Yeah, so for example, I'll give you a case in point. Someone figured out how to add multiple versions, which is a specific type of field, to a CRM amenity. That was a hole in our framework. You aren't supposed to be able to do that. It's supposed to be a unique field. But because the original CRM solution schema used two different tables to contain an entity, you could do it. So that was now something that we've now blocked. So it's that sort of things. We've gone through all the supported types. We essentially filter out anything that is unsupported or shouldn't be set by a third party. But as Brandon said.
Let's do one or two more questions, right?
Yep. Other question. Actually, you were next, sir.
I like the tools in Visual Studio as a developer, but I also like PowerShell to automate some things, maybe deployment on a maintenance for testing.
Mm-hmm.
You were talking in at the start about some good PowerShell libraries.
Mm-hmm. You're looking at the right guy who's
right
not
here.
Looking right back at you, right there in the front. When is your guys' session?
4 o'clock, we're doing Q&A.
4 o'clock, these guys are doing an interactive discussion in the PFE team. Like, and
on you, upgrading, but we can talk
you can come kick me later about this, but like I feel like Sean's the right person for you to ask that question too.
It's called XR on PowerShell, it's on GitHub. If you just search for PowerShell on XR, it should
The way that we do it internally is the packages, the solutions that you see generate and compile into packages, and then we use PowerShell to deploy the packages. That's how we do it. So that's part of our VSRM release process.
That's where the ALM was.
Yes. Yeah, it was all through. Well, the ADX, yeah. So ADX came through with the PowerShell components. That's not, we only have two groups that are actively using that. Everybody else is using VSRM, release management through Visual Studio, and doing it using package deployment.
Let's grab this one in the back.
One in the back, yes, sir.
Yep.
That's you.
You mean like an environment, like a Docker container? Is that what you're asking?
So in other words, generate a CRM instance and stamp the configuration onto it.
So, well, I think TFS right now for other custom code that isn't CRM specific can generate a management
loop,
which can then be applied to an existing container.
So
what's your use scenario there? Are you a cloud service provider? Is that, or is it just for a dev environment?
Yeah,
no, I get it, though. But you're drawing dependencies on that as well.
Yeah, so it's an interesting, so there's multiple answers to that question, but the short answer is that CRM isn't designed that way. CRM is an infrastructure platform unto itself that has its own scaling feature sets and own capabilities. So a solution configures the system, and directs the configuration of a system versus stamps the system.
Just to add to that too, the simple advice I give customers in this scenario, Matt, would be always be ready to start from a zero state.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas you sort of have the VM build and stuff like that, it'd be possible to start from a zero state with that too, but like the time to deliver on that particular solution would be really difficult, right? Because you're gonna build a VM, provision it, install and configure the product, and then probably install a bunch of other stuff that might be related that's external to the product, and then you would do this deployment bit on top of it. I think of System Center when I think of problems like that, because it would be possible to build with VMM a script for that. But
you can do an on-prem deploy, do a restore of a CRM template, a template org,
right,
and do a rolling build that way should you want to.
Yeah, this would be sort of on-prem based. What you were talking about, that sort of sounds like Chef. But once you've got that built and you version that container, you could deploy that like that.
Right.
Yeah, so... Yeah, so you can, so at the end of the day, CRM is SQL-based. Okay, so the amount of time it takes to actually bring it alive is the amount of time it takes to do a database restore. Okay, that's literally that's the gating factor. Actually, no. If you've already imported the org, you can just gate it and then reset the IIS instance and it'll reload. That's the gating factor. Assume you didn't change the org name. Okay, so if you change the org name, then you have to reinstance it. Right, you have to re-import if you change the org name. That's actually part of the ADX way of doing ALM. The reason that we're not pushing that forward is that we don't have a way to do that in CRM Online in such a way that it's rapid and rapid for you to use. We do have sandboxing, but it's not API scriptable. You have to go through the UX to do it. For customers that are doing this on scale, generally we're telling them to use VMs and use developer-based VMs or use Azure-based VMs to do it. We actually have a pretty big developer community internally that use Azure VMs to do it.
There are, I actually found a GitHub project just like a month ago with a bunch of Azure ARM templates for doing this type of work.
Yeah.
So we'll probably dig that up for you if you're interested.
Might have been put out by one of us. So.
Yeah, probably.
So, okay.
What else we got?
Other questions? We're out of time, but we can go a couple of more minutes. Yes?
What's your recommendation for managing the development?
Actually, just a second, guys. So we're 6 minutes over. I think we're in between lunch.
We're on lunch.
So if you want to leave for lunch, thank you. Thank you very much for coming. If you want to stay and ask questions, we're going to stay here and answer questions. So thank you very much.
All right.
Okay. You get between people and their lunch. You got to use both.
Right.
Depends on what you're doing. So if you're pure XRM based, you need to use you need to use the web application to lay out the initial metadata. But then you can switch over to VS. Okay. If you're forms based and hybrid, then you've got to use both. Yep. Yes, sir. I'm sorry, I can't hear you. Right. Right. So your question is if I'm pointed at a specific solution, somebody else does a change and checks a change in, that's the metadata merge that happens on source control. Okay. Yep. Okay. Thanks, guys.